Starlight Lounge presents An Evening with the Progressive Box.
Old moon, yeah. That's Hugo, tickling the ivories. He just saved by bundling home and auto with Progressive. Gonna finally buy a ring for that gal of yours, Hugo? Send her my condolences. Hi-o! This next one's for you, too. There's a burglar in my heart. Thank you.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Discounts not available in all states or situations.
Welcome, everyone, to Creating a Family, talk about adoption and infertility. Today's show will be on paying for adoption. Here's just a taste of some of the great information you will hear on today's show. So, stay tuned.
Do not apply just when the ink has just dried on the home study. It's got to be a while. And that sometimes is a problem for domestic adoptive families because sometimes they don't know their timeline as well as maybe a little bit more of a predictable international family.
I am Dawn Davenport. I'm the director of Creating a Family. We're the National Adoption and Infertility Education Organization providing support and unbiased information before, during, and after adoption or fertility treatment to help create strong families. You can find us online at creatingafamily.org. We are a weekly radio show podcast, and to make sure that you automatically hear about each episode, you can subscribe to our show at either iTunes or on the radio page of our website, creatingafamily.org/radioshow. You can also use whatever format you are listening to this show. They will have a subscribe button as well. The Creating a Family radio show is underwritten by our corporate sponsor, Ferring Pharmaceutical. If you're struggling with infertility, it's easy to feel overwhelmed. Heaven only knows that's the case. For comprehensive resources, including infertility information, treatment options, and ways to save money, you can go to the Ferring website, which is ferringfertility.com. This show, as well as all the resources provided by Creating a Family, could not happen without the generous support of all of our gold sponsors who believe in our mission of providing education and support to pre- and post-adoptive families, as well as those struggling with infertility. A couple of our sponsors are Nightlight Christian Adoptions. They have been providing adoption services for more than 50 years with offices in California, Colorado, South Carolina, and Kentucky. Nightlight provides international, domestic, foster, and embryo donation and adoption services. We also have Bethany Christian Services. They are a global nonprofit organization dedicated to empowering children and families. They are committed to quality social services along the child welfare continuum, services ranging from pregnancy counseling and family preservation to foster care and adoption. We also have other great sponsors whose generosity allows us to bring you this show. We ask that when choosing an adoption or an infertility service provider, please consider choosing one from the Creating a Family directories, which you can find on the service provider page of our website. You can search by location, services, just a whole host of criteria that we think are important when choosing. By using these databases, you support those who support us, and we thank you. On today's show, we will be talking about paying for adoption. How in the world does an average family pay for an infant domestic adoption or an international adoption? What options are available for financing adoptions? What grants and what loans are available? Our guest today will be Kelly Ellison. She is with Your Adoption Finance Coach. And we also have Sherry Walrod with Resources for Adoption. We hope to have somebody from America's Christian Credit Union on. They are having trouble right now, but we hope they will be joining us shortly. Welcome, Kelly and Sherry, to Creating a Family.
Thank you. Good to be here.
You know, I'm going to start with a little unusual beginning today. I'm going to start by telling our audience what we aren't going to cover in this show. This show is intended to be a general intro into adoptions, loans, grants, and fundraising. While we aren't spending time on this show talking about foster care adoptions, we are well aware that one option for families struggling to pay for an adoption is to lower the cost of the adoption by adopting from foster care. There are over 120,000 kiddos whose parental rights have already been terminated, and they're sitting there waiting for adoptive families right now. There are also many, many others and other children in foster care who need foster families who may or may not ultimately need to be adopted. We have tons of resources on this option at creatingafamily.org under foster care adoptions. However, foster care adoptions are not the best option for everyone, and domestic infant adoptions and international adoptions can be quite expensive, so that's what this show is going to be covering. Another thing we're not going to delve into on today's show is the all-important topic of budgeting or old-fashioned savings. We will, however, have an upcoming show in August devoted to just this topic alone with someone from the Dave Ramsey Financial Peace University to talk about saving money the Dave Ramsey way. By the way, if you want more information about that show, sign up for our weekly newsletter on any of the pages of our website, creatingafamily.com. And last but certainly not least, the last thing we're not going to be talking about, and don't worry, I'll quickly get into the things we will be talking about here, but we won't be talking today about the adoption tax credit because we have an annual show in February devoted to answering everything you ever wanted to know about that all-important topic. Those shows, as well as all of our shows, are archived permanently on our site, and you can find all of our resources on the adoption tax credit by going hovering over in the blue horizontal menu, hover over the word adoption, click on resources, and then click on adoption tax credit. All the shows are located there. All right. Enough of what we're not going to cover, and let's jump into what we are going to cover. I want to start by talking about grants. We got a question asking about both loans and grants, but I want us to talk about the grant issue. It's from Sue Ellen. She says, "My husband and I aren't religious. I feel like the minority in the adoption world right now. Do your guests know of any loans or grants that are available that don't require you to be religious?" Sherry, I'd like to start with you, we're going to go back to talk about loans in a bit. Let's start right now. The percentages of do you have a feel for percentages of adoption grants that are open to people either of varying faith or no faith?
Yes, I don't know that I can give you a percentage, but I do know that many of the grant organizations have been established by Christian families, and so therefore many of their criteria do revolve around those type of criteria. However, there are a good amount that do not have any criteria and for religious or marital status, and usually those go hand in hand. If they don't have religious criteria, many times they do not have any marital status criteria as well. And the short list is helpusadopt.org and Gift of Adoption Fund and A Child Waits. That's the short list of those. Now, A Child Waits Foundation is international only. Helpusadopt.org and Gift of Adoption Fund would be for domestic or international, either one.
And that you raise a great question, which is singles is one, and we certainly got a question on that. So you've answered that as far from a granting standpoint. Kelly, from the international versus domestic, are many of the grants specific to where they restrict you to either one or the other, or are they open in general, or more grants open in general to either international or domestic?
I'm not sure that I can give you specifics about if some of them are, you know, most of the grants and loans are going to have guidelines or specifications. And really, my rule of thumb when we work with families is to have them look at those grant specifications. Some of them are going to, as Sherry said, some of them are going to be for both. Some of them are going to be for international. There is a large number of grants that are available for international adoption as well as special needs children. Some of the grants are also going to be associated with low to middle income, so they're going to have an income guideline. And really our rule of thumb when we're working with families is going to be making sure that you fit within the guidelines of the grant. And many of those guidelines are posted online. So many of those guidelines you can read through. And I guess my big rule of thumb is don't ignore any of those, because that is their mission and their goal of who they're going to fund. I'm not sure if that answered your question, but there's certainly a large number number of grants that are available out there for international families and specifically for special needs. I'm sure that Sherry could also weigh in on that.
Yes, Sherry, if you would, as far as the availability for special needs or for non-special needs, because that's what we often will have questions on, people saying, you know, I see grants that are available for special needs, but as far as we know, our child will not have special needs.
Yes, I think sometimes some of the grants you can't even apply to until you have a referral of a child. There, again, just like Kelly mentioned, there's a lot of eligibility criteria, and you can't ignore those, and you have to make sure you line up with their criteria because you don't want to waste your time or the organization's time applying. And so most of that is listed out, and that's one of the things that we try to specialize in is helping guide families to the right sources so that they're not wasting people's time. I would say, just from my experience, probably there are a few more grants available for international families than there are domestic families. And again, those because they're based on families who have gone through the process and felt a need that, you know, they wanted to try to fill a need. That doesn't say that there aren't some specifically for domestic families. And in fact, there's a couple of them that are even geared toward families who are adopting domestically who have had infertility issues. Mm-hmm. So that's, you know, good to know as well. Many times families who choose the domestic infant route could have infertility issues. And if they do, then those might be the options that would be best for them since those organizations tend to facilitate grants for families who have infertility issues as well.
Sherry, can you give us a couple of names of those that focus primarily on people who face
infertility? The first one that comes to mind is it's called the Cade Foundation. It's, it used to be called the Tina Cade Foundation. I believe it's just Cade Foundation. Unfortunately, their deadline just passed. I believe their deadline was maybe June 1st. There's a couple of them. It may even be June 15th, which would be good if you haven't got in on that one. But that's one specific one that I know of. The other thing is I know helpusadopt.org, the family that founded that came from an infertility background, and so they give preference to childless couples or families who are just working to become first-time parents. It's not to say that they won't grant for families with other children in the home, but it's what I call a parent-focused grant. They're looking primarily at the parental background, not what the child's needs are. It's what the parental needs are. They're looking to help parents become parents for the first time.
Gotcha. Okay. That makes sense. Kelly, one of the issues that is often puts pre-adoptive families in a conundrum is that many of the grants you are not eligible to apply until after you have a referral, but that requires you to go forward with the assumption without knowing that you're going to get a grant. How do you advise people around that? Because obviously the responsible thing to do is to make certain that you're going to be able to pay for this before you get started, but how do you advise people to work around that that timing issue?
Well, I think that when you make a decision to build your family through adoption, ultimately you have to know that you're going to be responsible for, 85 to 90% of the costs of your adoption. What we work with families to do is to help them to create a comprehensive plan that fits their specific need. Oftentimes I talk about there is no one size fits all. So we know, there's not every family does not fit into the same box. So when they're working with our coaches through our affiliate agencies, what's going to happen is we will do an assessment of what their specific financial situation is. Do they have, I know you said that you weren't talking about these specific items, but the family has to know that one grant is not going to pay for their adoption, just as one loan is not going to pay for it or one fundraiser is not going to pay for it. So the loan or the grant might not be, the loan might come first, the grant might come after they've received their referral or after the specific guidelines of that particular grant if they are awarded that. I think we're doing a four-week webinar boot camp with a number of our families, and just last night, Dawn, we were talking about this particular topic. What we encourage families to do is look at your expenses, determine what your gap is, and then decide what the timing is. So if you know that you're going to be, through your research, you know you're going to be applying for a grant, and you have specific grant organizations or foundations that you're going to apply for, as Sherry pointed out, you have to consider the guidelines, you have to consider the deadline, and this all works into a timeline for you. So we really recommend that our families look at a timeline, and so the grant might not come until later, but then they have to also have other things that are going to fit into that picture, be it savings, be it a loan, be it whatever the case might be, but they need to be able to put that whole comprehensive picture together.
Okay.
Yeah, and if I can say that, I really appreciate, you know, what Kelly has said, because we do a very similar thing in dividing the adoption process into five different phases. And there again, just like what she said, the grant part is probably not going to come into your overall plan until maybe the latter part of the third phase, and many times the fourth phase of the adoption. And the fifth phase is getting the child home. But there's phase one, two, three, and four, and you really are going to have to figure out what you're going to do for phase one, two, and most of three before the grants will even be a possibility for you. So, yes, there's a lot of planning that needs to be done on the front end to figure out where the gaps are, just like what, you know, Kelly said, and what, how are you going to fill those in, because grants don't typically – most grants do not award until after the home study, and a lot of times it's even later. You know, I know when I've talked to the founder of Help Us Adopt, she said do not apply just when the ink – has just dried on the home study. It, you know, it's got to be a while. And that sometimes is a problem for domestic adoptive families, because sometimes they don't know their timeline as well as maybe a little bit more of a predictable international family.
Yeah, that is, you're right. It's an interesting thing that, well, although honestly sometimes in some countries it's hard to predict the timing as well. Let me welcome to our panel Natalie DePratt. She is with America's Christian Credit Union. Welcome. I'm glad you could join us, Natalie. We're going to be talking now about financing and adoption with loans. Before I get to you, Natalie, I wanted to ask Sherry. We're going to talk most of this time about adoption-specific loans, but Sherry, I wanted you to talk briefly about loan options that are not specific to adoption before I start talking with Natalie about adoption-specific loans. What options do people have for loans, Sherry, that are not specific to adoptions?
Well, first I would like to say what I would prefer that families avoid, and that is doing credit card advances and things like that, and because they can change the terms of their agreement, which is what happened to, in our case, and it can really throw you for a loop. I know the other things that I try to have people avoid is filling out those online forms for personal loans, and then you don't know where that information goes. Once you hit submit, it's going to send your information to a ton of different, quote-unquote, lenders, and it's there again, your personal private information is going who knows where. So some of the safer options are checking with your local hometown bank. Those don't occur very often anymore because there's so many mega banks, but if you can check with your local hometown bank to see what they can help you work out, as well as credit unions and savings and loans. Sometimes if you're a member of a credit union, like I know Natalie's group is, but if you don't fall within their criteria, sometimes if you're in a teacher's credit union or a firefighter's credit union, things like that, I prefer people use that because typically you're a member of that union, and hopefully you will not be, you know, fall victim to predatory lending practices. And I know Natalie will have a lot to say about that, and I've written articles about that too. If it sounds too good to be true, please remember it probably is, and do not let your emotions take over. And that's what I see sometimes is our better judgment sometimes can go out the window when emotions are running high and you feel desperate. So pull back and maybe ask somebody else's opinion on what they think, if this is a good idea or not, when it comes to loans, especially non-adoption-specific loans that are considered a personal loan.
Yes, because the last thing you need when you're starting parenting is to be burdened with unfair, I suppose unfair is not a correct term, but predatory interest and a huge amount of debt. Natalie,
Dawn, could I just chime in here for just a second based on what Sherry just said? I agree with her.
Yes.
And
go
I
ahead,
think another me. Resource for this is to ask your adoption agency. If you're working with an agency or an adoption provider or professional, a lot of times they're going to have relationships or they're going to have experiences with various different loan companies. And in some cases, some of the larger adoption agencies even will provide loans to you at low interest rates. So that is another option that families can look at. And it's not, you know, we find that a lot of times adoption agencies don't talk too much about the whole financial picture. Some of them do more than others. But there are, I have seen a couple of, over the last few months, a couple of larger adoption agencies. I won't mention their names, but larger adoption agencies that also do provide low interest loans to families. So I think that's a good idea as well.
That's a great place to at least begin. Mm-hmm. Natalie, what are some of the advantages or maybe distinctions would be a better way to say it, between an adoption-specific loan, which your organization provides, or over general non-adoption-specific loans?
Well, we offer, I mean, basically what our adoption loan program started out with is essentially an unsecured personal loan. We just offered better rates for those that were adopting. And there are certain paperwork and standards that you have to be at in order to get that loan. So I guess what the difference would be is if you applied for a personal loan or what most credit unions call a signature loan, there would be no qualifications, meaning you would not have to have in place a home study or, you know, your fee schedule or signed contract with an agency, which we do require on the adoption loan. So where we suggest a non-adoption personal loan is for those that maybe are just starting out who need funds to do their home study, do that initial down payment maybe towards the agency. So they might have a little bit higher interest rate than the adoption loan would, but there are no restrictions. It's based on just your signature and your qualification for meeting the criteria to get a personal loan. So those would be probably the biggest difference would be of, you know, a personal loan is going to have a little higher interest rate, but you aren't going to have the requirements needed for the adoption loan.
But an adoption loan, well, actually, you have America's Christian Credit Union, as well as actually, I believe, probably most of the funding institutions, loan institutions, have two general types of adoption or loans that could be utilized. One would be the general, I guess, personal loan is that you just mentioned, as well as your standard adoption loan, as well as your equity adoption loan. And I think that's pretty typical of other lending institutions as well. How do they differ, and how do people make the determination of which one is in their best interest?
Well, what we do is we kind of really encourage members and kind of like what I believe Sherry was saying is not to just go online and apply for a personal loan and hope that you shoot towards something that would be approved for you, because it really is a individual kind of criteria for each family. So what we like to do is we like to speak with them. We like to interview kind of where they're at, what their whole financial picture is. And we actually have three different types of adoption loan. We have the traditional adoption loan, which is a signature loan, a personal type of loan. We also offer an equity, excuse me, and we also offer an adoption visa, which kind of allows a line of credit that they can use that up until the time they're completed with their adoption, and then we actually convert that over into the traditional adoption loan so that their payments are now amortized over a certain period of time rather than being open-ended like a credit card is, so that they can actually get that loan paid down in, say, 5 years. So we allow them to use the visa in order to travel with the card and be able to use and only have to pay back as they need it. So when you're talking about different types of loans, when you have a personal loan, you're applying for that loan and you're getting that lump sum all in one shot. So you're going to be making a payment on that entire amount starting from the beginning, whether your adoption, whether you're in the beginning of the adoption or whether at the end, you're going to have quite a large payment, you know, depending on how much you are applying for. If you used a home equity, you'd be using the equity in your home, which means that you're going to get a lower interest rate because it is secured by your home, and then you're only also taking those funds as needed. So you're only making a payment on what you've borrowed so far. And then the same thing with the visa. The visa is going to have a slightly higher rate than our adoption loan, the traditional, but you are only borrowing as you're needing it in the beginning because we all know it comes in stages, so you may not need the entire amount up front. So that's why we offer three different programs. What makes us different, because we are, you know, we understand how the adoption works. We understand the struggles out there, and the reason why we got into it is because of the predatory lending and high rates that were being offered out there. So, yes, you can probably get a home equity loan anywhere, or you could probably get a personal loan anywhere, but we actually personally underwrite these. They don't go into a system to where if you're automatically approved based on X credit, your financial situation, we take all that into consideration, and then we also offer a lower interest rate than what you could get out there in the marketplace.
You are listening to Creating a Family. Today we're talking about paying for adoption. Creating a Family has the largest adoption and infertility communities on the social networks, and we would love to have you join us. On Twitter, you can connect with us at Creating a Family. On Facebook, you have three ways to connect with us. One would be our Facebook page, which, of course, is facebook.com/creatingafamily. We also have a very large and active and supportive support group. It's a closed group on Facebook, and the easiest way to find that is just to type in the words Creating a Family, and both the page and the group will pop up. You can like the page and join the group. We will have to let you in since it is a closed group, which means that your posts are not seen outside of the group or outside of members of the group. And, of course, you can connect with me individually, and I am dawn.davenport1. And if you are, like I am, active on Pinterest, I love Pinterest. We have probably close to 30 adoption and infertility boards. It's just one of the funnest places to hang out. You can find us over there. Our name over there is, interestingly enough, Creating a Family. So please join us. We have a question from Shelby. She says, I'm so glad you're doing this show right now. It's all my husband and I are talking about. I have some questions for your guest. How much can we borrow? Is there a limit to the amount if we don't know in advance exactly how much our adoption will cost? And can we finance travel? So let's take that somewhat individually. Natalie, I think you answered some of the financing travel, but we're going to circle back to that. How much can people borrow? Kelly, speaking in general, and then Natalie, I'd like you to speak specific to your organization. But Kelly, speaking in general, are there limits to the amount people can borrow to finance an adoption?
I think that depends upon the individual. It depends upon their individual credit rating that they have. And, you know, a point that Sherry made earlier with regard to the relationships that you have with your own bank or your own credit union, savings and loans, you know, it's going to depend a lot about the type of borrowing that you want to do. For example, Natalie talked about, is it a signature loan? Is it a secured loan with the equity in your home? There just really isn't an answer to that particular question. My recommendation would be that they go to their first, you start with your bank. You start where you have a relationship. Then you're going to go from there. So do you have a home? Do you have equity in your home? What is your risk? Are you risk averse? Do you want to take that kind of a risk? If you're doing an international adoption, some of these adoptions can be upwards of $40,000 and $50,000 depending upon the country, depending upon what the specific circumstances are. So I don't really know that there is an answer to that question, you know, just across the board. I will tell you that the loan companies, and I also think the grant companies, the grant or the foundations, are going to want to see a plan. I keep kind of harping on this plan idea. They're going to want to know that you have thought through this process. And so if your loan or your adoption is $35,000 or $40,000, that you've thought through the process of how you're going to put the pieces together. The way you do that is to really go through a process of understanding what are you willing to do. Are you willing to use your 401k as collateral? Are you willing to use your home as collateral? And how do the various different pieces come together? I'm not sure that it's realistic to think that you could get all of the money that you need for your adoption, depending upon how much it is, from one source. I think you really have to look at multiple sources for how you're going to get that money. I hope that answers the question. It's not complete. You know, there is no – one of the reasons we're having this conversation today is there is no book that we can pull down off the shelf that says this is how you fund your adoption, right?
Right, because it's not a cookie-cutter approach, absolutely.
No, no.
Sherry, right. Go ahead.
I'm sorry, this is Dan. I can just kind of speak on that. I mean, as far as dollar amounts go,
okay.
There are limitations when you go to a credit union. For example, our max loan amount on a traditional adoption loan would be $50,000. And then if you have the equity in your home, you know, you can definitely go much higher than that if the equity is available. Where we look at is we try to look at everybody's financial aspect, because our job also is to help them be good stewards with their money.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't want to put a family into a predicament that they're going to get the child home and then be so strapped that they're financially going to be struggling. So we look at different avenues. We may look to see if they have a vehicle paid off, that we could use the vehicle as collateral because the interest rate would be so much lower even than a signature loan. So we look at different ways that we can do different types of funding that's going to get them the lowest rate, try to secure as much as we can, and then use the actual unsecured personal loan as the last resort. So there is a dollar amount for us that $50,000 would be the max unsecured we could do. But like she said, every family is different. We look at not just your credit score, but also look at it's called debt-to-income ratio. So how much discretionary income does this leave you with when you have taken this loan out? Can you live comfortably upon that? And those are some of the things that we take into consideration.
And one of the things that, although, as I said at the beginning, we're not going to spend time on this show talking about the adoption tax credit since we have so many resources and do shows specific to that, but one of the things to consider is if you will be eligible for the adoption tax credit, it can be a loan can be used as a stopgap to help pay for cost until, because depending on the type of adoption, you may not be eligible for the tax credit until the adoption is finalized, or in any event, you wouldn't be getting it until after you file your credit, file your taxes. Keep in mind, however, that it is no longer a refundable credit, so that is something to keep in mind. But again, you can go to our resources on the adoption tax credit to get an understanding of all of that. Sherry, before we leave Shelby's question, I'm going to kind of put – she has two, and her point is that often we don't know the total cost of adoption until after the adoption is complete, and that's really with both domestic – depending on the agency and the specific situation, as well as in international, and certainly travel costs are an unknown and often an unknown. So how do people approach the idea of borrowing when they don't know how much they're going to need to borrow?
Well, first of all, I would say that you need to make sure that your agency is providing you a good overview. It should not be a huge shock and surprise. In other words, you know, if they say, looks like predictability costs are going to be $20,000, and then, oh, by the way, now here's $10,000 and so on, and then you get up to $40,000. That should not be a shock and surprise. So the point being that, you know, while it could be between $20,000 and $30,000, it should not have a huge gap. There should not be a $10,000 to $20,000, $30,000 gap between what they predict and what you're spending. So while that's, you know, I hope that's not, you know, circular reasoning for people, but there should be.
No, it's not.
Most agencies should provide you with a very detailed list that right now, you know, the fingerprinting charge is so much, and right now the home study cost is so much, and so on and so forth, and, you know, travel costs are roughly in this range. It should not say roughly, you know, $1,000, and then all of a sudden you're spending $10,000 on travel cost. So you should have kind of a, you know, a goal point. And right now I think averages, it's running around $30,000 is what I would say you need to try to plan for. It could be $28,000, it could be $32,000 or $33,000, but right now I think averages, domestic and international, are running between $28,000 and $32,000. So I would say you need to kind of have that $30,000, you know, idea in your head that that's where we're going to head for. And so, and then, like, you know, Kelly talked about, plan that out and look and see at what phases do you need so much. Like, today we need $300 to put in the application fee. And then in 4 weeks, we're going to have fingerprints, which is going to be however much. And then in 6 weeks, we're going to need to have, you know, $2,500 for the home study fee, and so on. I hope that sort of answers your question. I'm not sure. But the point is that I think at least most good reputable agencies really should have a very specific breakdown of most of those costs. And even if they say the range is so much, right now if you're traveling to China, the range is so much per person. Obviously, it can vary a little bit inside or outside of that, but it should not be astronomically outside of that range that they provide you.
And we at Creating a Family do have a three-step process on for how to choose an adoption agency. And one of the things that we give you questions and actually templates for comparing costs between agencies. And one of the reasons we do that is to help you pin down the estimated cost. You may not know exactly, but as Sherry just said, it shouldn't be wildly different either. We have a question here from Ethan. How long do you have to pay off an adoption loan, and what happens if the adoption falls through for some reason? Natalie, could you address that? How and address it in general, and if you want also to specific to America's Christian Credit Union, but also if you kind of have some general ideas of what other lenders do as far as paying off loans.
Yes. We actually And to speak in general, it really does vary from financial institution to financial institution on what type of loan they get as far as how long their terms can go. What I have found right now in the marketplace, it is very hard to find companies that are still doing personal loans, and if they are, they're for smaller amounts and shorter periods of time. So I'm going to speak more specific to America's Christian Credit Union since I don't have specifics for other financial institutions. However, our adoption loan can go out as far as 84 months, so that is the longest term that we can do. We also, unless you also do a home equity type of loan, if you do a second or a home equity, then there are different choices there where you can amortize over 20 years on a home equity. So there are ways to take that out longer to make your payment smaller by using a secured loan. But for the unsecured loan, the maximum term is 84 months. And that's probably about, you know, where they, you know, maximum where most institutions would be on an unsecured loan.
What happens if the adoption falls through?
Right. We have had that happen. Unfortunately, you know, the loan is completely separate than your adoption. We do what we can to try and work with them. But, again, that's why we try to provide them options, whether it's through the adoption visa or through an equity type of loan, to only borrow what you need so far. Because if you get into the process, which we have seen happen, you take the entire amount up front, and part of our – you know, you have to be pretty fully invested and ready to go by the time you get that adoption loan because you will have your fee schedule and at that point. And so if you've taken that whole amount and then something falls through, you know, we encourage you obviously for the money that you have not used to put it back onto your loan. We have also found that, you know, sometimes agencies refund money. Sometimes what they'll do is they use that towards, you know, trying to get you another match. So there are different options, but we have had people that are paying down on a portion of their loan still for money they've had to pay to an agency where it has fallen through. So, you know, you do have to take that into consideration when you're making that commitment to a loan, that you're borrowing it based on you and your credit, not based on whether the adoption goes through. So you have to take that into consideration. I know that we have seen that happen before,
mm-hmm.
where
it does,
you know, a loan will fall through.
Well, I
yeah.
will say, too, that's one of the things we encourage people to find out up front before choosing an agency is the whole idea of a refund policy, because the reality is it is something you should think about before you choose an agency, because adoptions, for various reasons, may not be completed, and it's something to think about what happens to the money that's been expended. Sherry, what are the options for families? We hear about interest-free loans. Obviously, that would be definitely a first choice for many people considering loans. For, I guess that's a dumb statement, for most people considering loans.
Yeah.
And
interest-free is always better than not free.
Yeah, exactly. Anything that's got the word free in it usually is better than things that I have to pay
yes.
for. Not always.
Well, again, I would say we need to make sure and aim for the legitimate organizations that have policies about their financial transparency. That's what I always look for. If they're not willing to disclose their finances, that's a big red flag. But there's a couple of interest-free options, and LifeSung for Orphans is one. ABBA Fund is another, and of course, both of those are going to be, you know, for Christian families. Sometimes they will. I know LifeSung will do single women on a case-by-case basis, but I'm pretty sure ABBA Fund is Christian married couples. So if you're not a Christian and if you're single, one of your other options would be Pathways for Little Feet. And then there is a low-interest option, and that is through a Child Waits Foundation. Again, a Child Waits is international only. So your choices become a little more narrow when you're talking about, of course, 0% interest. And I also know a Child Waits Foundation does require a co-signer on their loans, a co-signer that is not a member of your immediate family. And theirs, the last time I checked, were about a 5% interest rate, and you have to pay those back within, I think, 5 years. And again, you know, they're a nonprofit organization, but they're trying to get that money back in to their, you know, to their account so that they can distribute it to other families. So if you are, you know, a single, or if you're not Christian, your 0% loan options are going to be much, much less.
Comment sent in, or a statement sent in by Abigail. She said she asked us to let people in the Los Angeles and Southern California area know about an interest-free loans offered by the Jewish Free Loan Association
mm-hmm.
of Los Angeles.
Okay. Yeah, and I did forget
loans.
About them. They're restricted to
Jewish families in Southern mm-hmm. California.
Right, I was going to mention them, too.
Across the country as well. Mm-hmm. Those are across the country if you find the right organization. And many times the Jewish community is usually very well connected, and so they do know where those are within their own communities usually.
So did I understand you to say that the low-interest or no-interest loans are not, that there may be other Jewish organizations, perhaps Jewish loan associations, that's the name of the one in Los Angeles, for people to look
yes.
up that might be in their region. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, there are regional offices throughout the country, you know, like the East and Midwest and so forth. But yes, those, and we don't actually have those listed on our website, mainly because, again, most of the Jewish community is already pretty well plugged in to their community, and if they're, you know, involved in their place of worship, a lot of times that information is passed throughout their community, and so they're not, you know, looking for it as much as other people are looking for it.
Interesting.
And can I address, I'm sorry, I was
yeah.
going to address that as well. With the credit union, we always do encourage them to try and go out there and get the free money first. You know, to look at fundraising options. My experience when I have worked and have been to conferences and so forth with these companies such as ABBA Fund and LifeSung, one of the things that we do encourage people to do is really have a plan, like Kelly had said, is you really need to have that plan out there, because some of those organizations, they do a very thorough examination of their applications, and it is not something you're going to get an answer on immediately. It could take, you know, 6 weeks, 6 to 8 weeks to get a decision. So if you're down to the wire and you're needing your funds, you know, the free money sometimes is not going to be available for you, because you do need to plan that in advance. So that should always be something that you are looking to do towards the beginning of your journey. because it can take a little bit longer. I know that they do, if there's a special circumstance where it needs to be looked at quicker, they will try and do that for you. So you need to just make sure that that is part of your planning process, because there are limitations on what they can do in their funds to be able to lend out, and they are, they want to make sure that they're choosing the right family. So it is a longer process. So just make sure that you're taking advantage of that first.
And I'll just say to that, Dawn, that I couldn't agree more with what Natalie is saying. With relationship to, you want to see this as a relationship building process. So many of these foundations, many of these loan companies, even it's just like going to your local bank. You want to begin to develop a relationship with them. And that relationship is going to take time. So I couldn't agree more. You can't go into a reactive mode about needing money now. You have to really sit down and look at a plan and think about when certain money can come in, when it's best to do the fundraising, when it's best to apply for the grants, and when it's best to apply for the loans, because folks want to know about you. They want to know what you've done up to this point. They want to know how committed you are. Another thing that I will say about this is that I don't think a lot of folks really understand that there's a lot of competition for this. So you have to really think about what your story is, and one of the ways that we work with our families is to help them to create their story around their adoption. And there are wonderful, inspiring stories, and I can tell you as a fundraising professional for 25 years, I have never seen a community come together like it comes together around adoption. And so whether you're filling out a loan application or a grant application, or you're talking to your neighbor down the street, the story around your adoption, why you're adopting, and sharing that level of vulnerability and that level of inspiration that you have about why you've chosen to build your family this way is a big part of that process and how you begin to develop that community around bringing that community together about building your family through adoption.
Natalie, we received a question earlier, and we answered it as far as grants, but I think it was from Sue Ellen. She says that they are not religious, and she wants to know what the loan options would be for non-religious families. Are families applying to America's Christian Credit Union limited to Christian families?
Yes, because any credit union has what they call a field of membership. It has basically a common, just like if I could not probably go to the Fireman's Credit Union and get in unless I had a family member who was a fireman or somebody who was already a member living in my home. So every credit union is, specific about their field of membership and statement of faith. So do you need to be, a member of the church? Not necessarily. You need to agree with our statement of faith. And, yes, there will be the question of, what church do you attend? So you would need to be of the Christian faith, to be able to say that you align yourself with what we believe in. And that's going to be across the board, no matter what credit union you go to. Now, obviously, a public financial institution such as a Bank of America or Wells Fargo, you don't have those type of criteria, but you also don't get the specialized products or lower rates that you could possibly get with a credit union when you have that relationship. And that relationship for us is of the Christian faith.
Okay, gotcha. I'd like to take a moment now to thank a few more of our gold sponsors and to remind you that it is through their generous support that we can bring you this show and all the resources at Creating a Family. We have Children's Connection. They are an adoption agency with offices throughout Texas providing domestic infant adoption, embryo donation adoption, home studies, and post-adoption support to families throughout the United States. We also have Hopscotch Adoptions. They are a national adoption agency with offices in North Carolina and New York, and they place children from Bulgaria, Georgia, Ghana, Armenia, Morocco, and Serbia. And I think that, Sherry, it would be, or actually, Kelly, I'd like to address this one to you. It's fair to state, I think we have made it clear, but that people should not go in with the expectation that they're going to get the a grant that would cover the full amount of their adoptions. I would assume that that would be obvious, but that is correct, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely.
And are there, if you are not adopting a child with special needs, are you less likely to find granting options, or are they evenly divided?
It's my opinion that I don't think they are evenly divided. Sherry probably has a more wealth of information or depth of information about this than I do, but it's my experience as I'm guiding our families that many families that are, you know, there are, as we've talked about today, there are specific foundations and organizations that are going to want to fund specific families based on what their mission is, based on what their goal is. So as we've listed, there are several organizations and foundations that do grants where you don't have to be affiliated with the faith, and that there are some infant domestic grants that are out there. I will say that for the most part, as I do my research out there, it looks like there are many, many more foundations that are more open to granting to those individuals who are low to middle income, adopting internationally and special needs. And one of the things that I will say about international adoption, in many cases, international, at least our federal government considers, according to the adoption tax credit, that international adoption is special needs adoption. Now, again, we get to the guidelines for the foundation and what they consider, how they define special needs. And that's very, very important. So, but there are a lot of, and when I say a lot, a fair number of grants that are available to internet families who are looking internationally, who are low to middle income, who are adopting special needs children. And there again, I will say the story around that is very, very important because there's some competition in that, if you can appreciate. Many applications coming in, all the stories being very compelling. So it can be a tough choice. I can't imagine sitting on the other side of that, Dawn, and trying to make those choices.
No, I think it would be very hard. Sherry, before we leave the whole idea of grants, anything to add to that, since you do have a wealth of knowledge when it comes to adoption grants?
Well, I have to agree with Kelly. As hard as it is to hear, it is really just the reality that there are more grant organizations that will favor some sort of a special needs, and there again, it depends on the special need, and it depends on what the definition of that is, and it is important to have some sort of a compelling story, how you write that, and how you sort of set yourself apart from all the other compelling stories, because they're all good stories. But the point is also that even if you are doing domestic and doing domestic infant adoptions, to not give up and to not think that there's nothing available for you. There are things available for you, and you just need to make sure and, you know, find out what those are, where those are located. And you may have just as a compelling a backstory, even though you're adopting a domestic healthy infant. Mm-hmm. And as far as international goes, because of the way international adoptions have changed over the last few years, just like what Kelly pointed out, the government, our government lists international adoptions, most of them, as special needs. And that's the trend now for international adoptions, is most of those are going to be special needs in one regard or another, whether it's an older child or limb differences, some of them minor, but that's kind of the way international adoptions are right now, is there is some degree of special
very much
needs.
Moving. Yeah, to that program. Well, no show talking about paying for adoption would be complete without discussing fundraising. Kelly, what type of fundraising events are most successful?
Oh gosh, that's a very loaded question, Dawn.
Yes, it is. Indeed, it is.
Yes, it is. You know, I have worked with many, many families in putting together a special event and fundraising events for their adoption, and very successful. There are a couple of pieces that make, and it doesn't matter if you are running a marathon or you're having a spaghetti dinner in the basement of your church. It really doesn't matter what the specific fundraising event is. Where it matters is in your ability to, again,
tell your story, and network in your community. That's really when, that is really what makes the difference between an exceptional fundraising event or an event where, you know, you have just a small group of people. And that's going to do, that's going to have a big effect on families. So if you are in a, you know, if you have a large network of people, or you have a church and you have a school and various different folks that are affiliated with you, it's up to you to get out and actually tell people about your adoption. I had worked with one family that we decided that we were going to do a marathon, and they came back to me and said, "Oh, we want to do a marathon." And I was like, "Okay, whoa, hold on a minute, that's a really big deal to actually do like a city marathon." So after further investigating with them, what we decided is that they really like to run marathons. And so we did a Run Baby Run challenge. And the family, the couple decided that they were going, and this was a domestic adoption, so they decided they were going to run 10 marathons in their city, and ended up doing that, had a nice dinner, had a silent auction combined with that, and announced it and gave pledge forms to all their friends and family. Raised a good deal of money with that. And then what happened was they got their referral and baby came much sooner than before the marathon was, the runs were done. So they decided to buy a little baby carrier and take the baby with them as they were finishing these runs. So, you know, that's one example of how families can really bring
a community. I hate those people who are in such good shape that they could run a marathon.
That's right, really.
Or carrying a baby, you know?
Well, right, exactly. But, you know, the whole point of that is that, you know, some folks are very open when we talk to our families and work with them. Some folks are very open to this. They get it right away. They realize right away that there's a community around there, around them with regard to their adoption. It is, again, so very specific. And my best recommendation to those who might be considering doing a fundraising event is make the event specific to you. How do your friends and family know you? What are the things that are exciting that you like to do? And so if you build it around what people in your community already know you for, then that makes it more interesting and more exciting. And the other thing that I will say is there are certainly many fundraising websites out there. If you want to talk about that, I'm happy to talk about that with you, where, you know, gift of adoption, my own Gotcha Gift Registry, donations, various different ways that you can receive cash gifts for your adoption. That's another way that you can do fundraising for your adoption. But if you are going to actually do a community fundraiser, make it specific to you, and don't be worried about this whole idea of, well, we don't want to ask for money, because it's really not about asking for money. It's about inviting people in to your story and in your journey. And
no, it's an interesting
that's
thing.
Where people want to be a part of that. Yes.
True. Fundraising is a very hot topic in our very large online community. There is a lot of diverse opinions out there. And because of that, I have blogged on it fairly often, including a very popular blog I did called Adoption Fundraising Etiquette, How Not to Be a Pest. I tell you what, I'll link to that in tomorrow's blog if anybody is interested. We're so glad to have you with us today. Just a second. Let me finish this one. We're so glad to have you with us today talking on the Creating a Family Show, talking about paying for adoption. We primarily keep in touch with our audience through our twice-weekly e-newsletter. We'd love to have you as a part of that. Just sign up on any page of our website. Yes, what were you saying?
Well, I can't agree with Kelly more that you really need to make sure that you do your fundraising event more around the family, less focus on the child, maybe some focus. But I do need to caution people how much information they share about the referral and the referred child, especially if they know. Again, it may be a special need, but I'm glad you wrote the thing on etiquette. I don't exactly remember if you had listed this or not, but the privacy, we have to consider the privacy of the child that is being adopted and how sharing information about that child globally it could be interpreted by their birth country or other people. So it's important to share general information but not too much specific information. While it may be even more compelling and get more people involved, it just have to be, there's a very fine line there between sharing enough to get people interested in your story specific about the child versus way too much and then, you know, violating their privacy and their concerns.
I don't And remember, if I don't think I necessarily talked about it in that blog, however, I have talked about that a lot on many blogs, I will find one of those and link to that tomorrow. It kind of a general good rule of thumb is try to imagine how your child might feel about it and the information that was shared. There is information that is specific and private to your child, and it really is your child's information and should be your child's decision. The other thing we tell people is once shared, you can't unshare it. And it's hard to remember that. It's hard to remember when you have an infant that, in fact, that someday this infant is going to be a teen who is going to be just very embarrassed that people might know that his birth mother was a prostitute or a drug addict or that he was left on the side of the road, you know, in a foreign country and found. This is just information that some people would not, he might well not have chosen to share that. So, yeah. I need to take one last moment to thank just a few more of our gold sponsors. As you know, as I've mentioned, please support those who support us. It's how we are able to do what we do, which is offer you all of our information without charge to help you be a better parent and help you be successful in becoming a parent. We have the law offices of James Fletcher Thompson, a South Carolina firm committed to adoption and assisted reproductive law, and we also have the Independent Adoption Center, whose mission is to provide open adoption placement and counseling to birth and adoptive families. They work with families in all 50 states and are fully licensed in California, New York, Florida, Texas, and more. We have unfortunately come to the end of our show. For our audience, if this show has been meaningful and you enjoy it, please rate this podcast on iTunes. If you have iTunes on your computer or phone, you can just search for Creating a Family and rate it there, or you can go to creatingafamily.org/radio show, click on the iTunes button. We are their top-rated show in this area, and we would like to continue to be that way because that's how they know how to recommend the show when people are searching. So please do that if you can. Thank you so much, Natalie DePratt with America's Christian Credit Union, Sherry Walrod with Resources for Adoption, and Kelly Ellison with Your Adoption Finance Coach for being our guest today on Creating a Family. If you want to participate in a discussion on the topics of this show, please get to my blog tomorrow, creatingafamily.org/blog. We will be talking about it then. If you would like to get more information about America's Christian Credit Union, you could go to their website, which is americaschristiancu.com. There is obviously no apostrophe in that, so it's americaschristiancu.com to get more information about Kelly or her services at Your Adoption Finance Coach. You could go to their website, which is youradoptionfinancecoach.com, or you can listen to her podcast, Adoption Coach Radio. To get more information about Sherry Walrod and the services she provides, you can go to her website, which is resources4adoption.com. So that's resources4adoption.com. Thanks for joining us today, and I will see you next week.
Let's say you just bought a house. Bad news is, you're one step closer to becoming your parents. You'll proudly mow the lawn. Ask if anybody noticed you mowed the lawn. Tell people to stay off the lawn. Compare it to your neighbor's lawn. And complain about having to mow the lawn again. Good news is, it's easy to bundle home and auto through Progressive and save on your car insurance. Which, of course, will go right into the lawn. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company, affiliates, and other insurers. Discount not available in all states or situations. And now, an ad from Dad.
All right, save money on car insurance when you bundle home and auto with Progressive.
Can I take these off? All right. What is this? This looks good.
Wow. That's well made. Where did you get this? I'm talking to you with the hair. Yeah, where did you get this? It's good stuff. That's solid. That's not veneer. That's solid stuff.
Progressive can't save you from becoming your parents, but we can save you money when you bundle home and auto. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company, affiliates, and other insurers. Discounts not available in all states or situations.